We're holding on Jim Lomond Bay, 3 lines from the bottom. We quoted yesterday Breiter that discussed the whole matter of after the sheriff has caused damage, is it one or the other of them able to sell it, demolish it, et cetera, et cetera. The last thing we mentioned, the Breiter mentioned the case that if the animal was tam, we said that kodmo balichovus vihigbihu, that if the balichovus, if the guy, the owner of the tam, in addition, owed other people money, and they went ahead and grabbed the animal to satisfy their debt, ben chov achle hizik ben hizik achle chov, regardless whether the chov came before the hezik or the hezik came before the chov, loy also loy klum, what they did didn't count for anything, l'pishen b'shalom el megufay, because the in the case of the tam, you're only paid out of the goof of the animal, and therefore, in a certain sense, the nizik has a shibud on it, as we discussed yesterday. Well, as we said, in the case of a muad, then they can go ahead, then they're able to take it. In the case of a muad, because he's not being paid the goof anyhow, he's being paid min halvi. So if he doesn't have, that's different. So b'shleim hezek atchlei chol. Fine, I can understand if the hezek happened before the chov, nizak and kodem. Obviously, the nizak has a prior claim to this animal. Therefore, if the balei chov come and take it, then they can't. Have a chov atchlei hezek b'al chov kodem. On the face of it, if the chov came first, shouldn't the balei chov be the first one to be able to? Shouldn't he have first rights there? And let's go further. Back to the hezek atchlei chov. Actually, even if the hezek came before the chov, you should argue. You could still argue that Baal Choy Kodim, you could argue that, fine, he may not have first rights over it, but if he was toifus it, if he went and grabbed it, why doesn't he get to keep it? Now, we had in Ksubas, Machoifus on this topic, between Mananus and the Chachamim, if you have different creditors, the case over there with the Baal Choy and Ksubas, but whatever, the principle is the same kind of thing, you have different Baal Choyfus, where a later one ends up being toifus ahead of where a later balchoyv ends up being toifus ahead of an earlier one, and we say, well, there's two different opinions over there, benanas and chachamim, whether what he did is valid, whether b'di'evit it's okay. Yeah, benanas says that yes, and chachamim say no. Well, shmamina, does that mean that we can prove that Baal Chayv me'ochosh akadim agava, masha gava loy gava? Can we prove from this braita then that if a later Baal Chayv comes and grabs it, then what he did is not considered valid? Because we're saying that the Baal Chayv came and took it, and we say nevertheless it's no good. So one way or the other, if the Baal Chayv came first, why shouldn't he have the right to? And if the Baal Chayv came later, does that prove that we have at least a braita over here, not like Benna? The answer is loy. La'olam emalach mashu gava gava. No, you could argue that normally maybe if the later Baal Chayv comes and grabs something to satisfy his debt, and b'di'evit what's done is done. The shiny hasam. However, it's different in the case that we're talking about over here about a sure tam da'amalei, because the nizik is able to say to the Baal Chayv, ilu gavach hava. Consider it like this: even if the ox was by you already, loy minach hava gavi. Wouldn't I be collecting from you anyway? Because after all, I'm getting paid out of the very sure that damaged me. So,
yeah, but that's not the main question. The question is, who has precedent?
No, but that's the point. In other words, the nizik can say to the Baal Chayv, the fact is, even if you had gone and taken the animal,
who said that you would have preference once the animal is taken? He's taken.
No, but that.
It's his argument,
but that's what we're saying. In other words, effectively, I have a shibud ahead of me. Tosfos points out that actually, Tosfos says that actually, that the Gemara is sort of eliding the main argument. The main argument, the Gemara is sort of glossing over the main argument. The main argument is when it comes to a Baal Chayv, there's no shibud on the Chalkul in any hand. A Baal Chayv technically only has a shibud on the if there's an apusiki. If there's an apusiki, we're not talking about it. No, in this case, the shur is an apusiki, as we discussed yesterday. The Torah effectively makes the shur an apusiki relative to the nizet, not relative to the Baal Chayv. So therefore, the main argument over here is that regardless whether the ox was by the original owner or whether it's by you, the fact is, I have an actual shibud on this ox, whereas you, the Baal Chayv, don't really have a shibud on the Talmud, period.
Because of the aposiki?
Because the Torah has made it an aposiki, effectively, yes. Because it's an implicit aposiki, because of the fact that the Torah says that I get paid out of the value of the ox. And therefore, in that sense, I have, therefore, regardless whether your choyv came first or my nezek came first, either way, I have a certain shaykhus to the shur that you don't. You have a general lien on the guy's property, primarily as real estate, not really so much on his metalpulin. I have a specific lien on this particular metalpulin, on this particular ox.
Because
the Torah says, yeah. Turn it up on it. Shove him up. Okay. So that's the conclusion is that meaning of the right. Even Ben Nanas normally says that the Baal Chayiv can take it, that the leader Baal Chayiv can take, and Masha also Asri would have to agree in this case that that's not the case. That the Nizek has first right to the animal over the Baal Chayiv.
Even if he comes after the Baal
Chayiv. Even if the Nizek only the Nezek only happened after the Chayiv was taken.
Even if the Baal Chayiv took already.
Right. That's what we're saying.
That's a very strong.
That's what we're saying. Yeah.
It has to be done through
Beis Din,
or you can just.
The pasuk would have to be done through Beis Din, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. Tanarabon. Shor shavam osayim shenagach shor shavam osayim. If a shor that's worth 200 zuz gores a shor that's worth 200 zuz, v'chavu by v'chamishin zuz, it caused 50 zuz worth of damage. So now we're not talking about killed it. We're talking about it only damaged it. So now the shur of the nizik is worth only 150. However, later on, the shavach later on it improved in value. The amad al abameis zuz. Now it's worth 400 zuz, twice what it was originally. However, she'el molei lo hizikoi. Now had this ox not caused the hezek in the first place, hoya amad al shmoinim meis zuz, then it would have been worth 800. The din is noisin kishasa nezik. You pay, the mazik pays according to the time of the nezik. Now, what does that mean? Rashi has two explanations. Rashi's first explanation is, on the face of it, look, the animal originally was worth 200. Now it's worth 400. Shouldn't the mazik maybe have the ability to say, well, you didn't lose anything. Okay, your ox originally was worth 200, and temporarily it was only worth 150. Now it's worth 400. Why should I have to pay anything? Nevertheless, we still say no. We look at the time of the Nezek. At the time of the Nezek, it went down by $50. Later it went up by a couple hundred. Not our problem.
Because?
We'll discuss the details of it soon. But
one rationality is logical is the other one.
The logic is because you go according to the time of the Nezek. What happens afterwards?
Why? Maybe you go by the time of the payment.
We'll see. We'll go through it in the Gemara. That's Rashi's first thing. Then Rashi's second explanation is maybe it's the other way around. What if the Nizik now is coming to the Mazik and saying, look, you're supposed to be paying me 50, or not really 50 actually, it's a time, so 25. Wait a minute, I lost 400 zuz because of you. This ox would have been worth 800 if it hadn't been for your shur goring it. You should have to pay me accordingly, you should have to be paying me half of that Nezik. No, we don't say that. We just say we look at what happened at the time of the Nezek. At the time of the Nezek, there was only a damage of 25. Later on, there was an implicit damage of 400. Not our problem. So that second explanation, in a way, is easier to understand because then, for sure, you can pop to him. It's a grumma. It's only an indirect thing. Nevertheless, though, Rashi says, Rashi doesn't really like the second explanation. He doesn't elaborate why. Tosfos explains that later the continuation of the discussion in the Gemara seems to point more to Rashi's first explanation, that we're not talking about the Nizik potentially suing for the lost increase in value, but rather we're talking about the Mazik trying to get out of payment altogether, which is Rashi's first explanation.
He could not sue for the loss of increased payment.
That's what we're saying. Well, that's actually the second explanation. The first explanation, right, yeah. And then the first explanation is we're focusing on the fact the mazik can't say, well, why should I have to pay at all? After all, your shur is worth more than it was before my ox ever got involved with it. Continues the b'raisa. Kichish, what if the other way around? What if the nizik animal deteriorated because of the goring? So now, in other words, it started out when it was gored, its value went down to 150. Now, after that, it's gotten weaker or sicker or whatever, now it's down to 100, let's say. Nevertheless, then kishach ha-moda b'din. Then we go according to how the value of it stands at the time that the case is brought to Beis Din. Again, for reasons which the Gemara will discuss too. What about the other way around? Shavach mazit. how about if the Mazik animal improved in value? Again, so the Mazik animal originally was worth 200, now it's worth 400. Notes in the Keshas HaNezek, you still pay him according to the time of the Nezek, which Rashi explained means, so what did we say? We said the animal was originally worth 200. The damage amounted to 50. The animal that was Mazik, that did the gore, was worth 200. Both animals, we said, were worth 200, let's say. The animal that did the goring was worth 200 at the time. The nezek amounted to 50. Therefore, chassi nezek amounts to 25.
Right.
Based on the opinion of Rabbi Akiva before, where we said that they become sort of shutfim in the ox,
right,
it comes out that now the nezek owns 1/8 of that ox. 25 is 1/8 of 200. Now, supposing that the ox has now gone up in value, it's now worth 400, does the nezek have the ability to say, well, okay, so then the ox has gone up by 100% in value, therefore my investment in it, my 1/8 of it also goes up, and therefore I'm still entitled to 1/8 of the value, 50 out of 400. No, we don't say that. We go according to the value it was at the time that it did the gore. So now it'll be down to 1/16. It'll be 25 out of 400. Before it was 25 out of 200, now it's 25 out of 400. Kichish, and now what happens if the attacking animal went down in value between the goring and coming to base? Then kishas hamada, but no, then you go according to the time according to how much it's worth when it's brought to base.
Once we say shot,
That's what the Gemara is going to ask. I should mention, Rabbi Hananel has a different understanding of this shavach and kichish. He says the question is more, what if, for example, what if the attacking animal, now we've talked many times before that the chassi nezek has capped the value of the animal. What happens, let's say at the time of the nezek, the animal was not worth as much as the chassi nezek. Now, by the time you come to Beis Din, it's increased in value, and now it is. So let's say it did $100 worth of nezek. The animal itself was only worth 50 at the time. So if that's how it remained, b'shas hamad b'din, and nezek would only get 50, he'd end up losing 150. Like this, by the time you come to Beis Din, the animal is worth 200. So now it's worth 100, let's say. So now on the face of it, he might be able to collect 100. No, we say you go according to kishas hamad, you go according to how it was originally. Whereas if it went down in value again, you go according to kishas hamad b'din. So now let's analyze. Omamar shavach mazik noitin kishas hamad. So we're saying that if the mazik animal goes up in value, then you pay according to how it was at the time of the nezek. Again, according to Rashi, it means that the percentage that the nezek is going to own of this animal has gone down. The actual dollar amount remains the same, but as a percentage of the animal, it goes down. According to Rabbi Hananel, it would mean that you have to look at the value of the animal as it was then, not the current value of it, and then figure out the amount that he's going to get paid based on that. So, mani Rabbi Shmuel. Now that seems to be according to Rabbi Shmuel. Dama Baal Choyvu, which Rabbi Shmuel said, as we learned yesterday, that the nizik is only considered a Baal Choyv, vizuzi, or domestically. He doesn't really own any part of this animal. He's not a shutuf in the animal. He's not according to Rabbi Shmuel. He's just owed X amount of money. So fine, that makes sense. You don't go, you're not going to go according to the increase or decrease, or you're not going to go according to the increase. No, that's what we're going to figure out. Right. Aim of Sefer, but consider the next part, Kichish. We said if the Mazik animal goes down in value, Kishas HaMod HaBedin, then you go according to how it is when it's brought to Beis Din. Asom Rav Akiva. Now that seems to be according to Rav Akiva, Dom HaShutfin, who says that they're considered Shutfin, and therefore you could argue, if you say that they're Shutfin, then the argument is, you say, well, the animal went down, the proportion stays the same, because the animal went down in value, fine. I mean, I owned at the time 7/8 of the animal, you own 1/8. It went down in value, we both share equally in the loss. Yeah. So Reisha Bishmal and Sefer Rav Akiva, you can tell me the price, one clause of the price is like Bishmal and another like Rav Akiva, it's usually not like that. No, the answer is like Kula Rav Akiva. You know, you can say the whole price is like Rav Akiva. But Hoch my skin and Kisha Pitmai. No, the case that we're talking about over here, Pitmai means that you fed it. Pitmai literally means like what's the word in English? Like you fed it because you're trying to fatten it up. Pitmai means you fattened it up. In other words, we're not talking about shabbat. So we're talking about the mazik again. We're talking about the mazik animal went up in value. When we say it went up in value, it doesn't mean it went up on its own. Let's say the price of oxen has gone up or what have you. No, we're talking about that he actually did something to improve the animal's value. He fed it richer food in order to fatten it up.
Spend more money
on it, yeah.
No, he didn't spend more money, but he had the kavana to make it.
No, that's not the point. The point is not whether we have the kavana. The point is, so Rashi says, therefore, if it was shavach machmas atma, if it was the ox spontaneously went up in value, fine. He didn't invest any money in it. Like this, he invested money in it. He put money into it. So therefore, you can't argue that the nizik should gain any part of that shavach because he didn't put any of that money into it. Tosfos learns somewhat differently. Tosfos learns that actually what the situation might be. I don't know what I mean. Tosfos explains a little bit differently that actually you could consider how much did he put into it and how much is he getting out of it. We're saying the animal went up in value by 200 zuz, let's say, but how much was the fee worth that he fed it? If the feed is where you could argue. I mean, the case we're talking about over here, Tosfos says that let's say so he fed it $200 worth of food, and now it went up in value by two. No, now it went up in value by 200. So therefore, the amount that he put into it is the amount that he's getting.
That's all. No, he put 200 in it, and now it increases 400.
Well, then Tosfos would say that actually we would consider the nizik a partner to that extent. Tosfos gives an analogy to a case that we learned, I think, in Gittin about a case where somebody goes into somebody's property without their permission and improves it, where he's entitled to a certain share in the improvement of it, depending how much the amount he spent is relative to the amount that it was improved in value.
That
means, in other words, because again, they're shutfim, so therefore, as a shutf, he has the right to fatten up this animal. So that's what we're talking about. Sorry about that. He's a shutf. He has a right to fatten up the animal, and yeah. Okay.
Who says he has the right to fatten the animal without the other one's consent? Shutfim must make decisions together.
Not necessarily, but besides that, here, Depends how you look at it. Either way, the nizik is not losing from it. If we say the way the Braisa said, that the nizik's share of the animal, his percentage of the animal is going to go down, but the dollar amount still remains the same. He's still going to own $25 of this animal. It's just it's a larger, fatter animal now, so his portion is only 1/16 instead of 1/8. But he still gets $25 worth of meat out of the animal.
From a loss of profit standpoint. I'm talking from the right.
So that's why that's what I'm saying. Tosfos analogizes it to a case where again we talked about a case, I think it was in Gittin, where a person goes into somebody else's property without permission. Then you have a case where a person goes into somebody's property with permission and improves it. In this case, if they're considered shutfim, that's implicit permission. The shirt is still in my reshut, maybe in the mazik. It hasn't been given over to you yet. I have the right to fatten it up if I want.
So then what happens if one of the shutfim put the money in and the other one didn't? And so they both share the same increase without one having...
Again, the nizik stands to lose nothing. It would be coconut on the desk. Either way, if you say that the dollar amount remains the same, that's it. He's not losing anything. And if you say that when the value of the animal goes up more than the amount of food that was put into it, then he's gaining from it.
Yeah.
Okay, so fine. The question is ikish pitmoy. Fine, but if you're talking about the case that the mazik fattened up the animal, amoresha, then now let's go back and look at the resha, the part where it talks about if the nizik animal went up. If you're going to say that the sefer, again, we have four cases in the braisa, right? You have the nizik animal went up in value, went down in value. The mazik animal went up in value, down in value. We said when it comes to the mazik animal, what are we talking about? Is it going to be shmol or Rabbi Akiva? We said it's according to Rabbi Akiva, but Rabbi Akiva would make a distinction. He would say that if you, the mazik, put money into fattening up the animal, the nizik does not get to share in that profit. Now, if you're going to explain like that, then it has to be. We assume the braisa is talking about the same case throughout. So therefore, when we say that the nizik animal improved, which is case number one, would have to be the case where he fattened it up. So let's see, Amar Reisha, look at the Reisha. Shavach Vavad al-Dalad Meyasud. We said that if the animal went, the Nizik animal went up in value and now is worth 400 Zuz, Noisim like a Shatha Nezik. So we say that you pay according to the time of the Nezik. Now, Ikshapit Meitzrichel Meimar. Now, obviously, if the Nizik himself put money into fattening up his animal, why should we think? Again, this is why Tosfos says that Rashi's first explanation seems to fit better with the Gemara. How on earth would we even think that the mazik would have the ability to say, because you put money into fattening up your animal, therefore I should be off the hook of paying? What's the logic? Why would you even think such a thing? Necessarily, therefore, on the face of it, we have to say it's not talking about he fattened it up. It's talking about it increased in value on its own. The price of oxen went up, let's say. So now the mazik is able to argue that, after all, that didn't cause you a loss because it went up by itself. So yeah. No, because actually the Reisha can be referring to whether it wouldn't make a difference for that purpose whether the Nizik went and actually fattened up the animal or whether it increased in value, spontaneously. It would work out either way. This that we're saying, that the mazik does not get off the hook for paying because the animal went up in value, that would be true regardless. Now, it's true that if you fattened up the animal, there's no real chiddush in it. But chiddush would be the itzur flashman and the hech, the shop chomimela, no, it's like a shasa nezik. Still, though, we do have to be told, what if the value went up on its own? Nevertheless, the mazik does not get out of paying because of that. That's the point. Seifa, loy mashkachas la'elach shepitimah. The Sefer, of necessity, has to be talking about where he fattened up the animal. So therefore, the two cases of the Braisa are parallel. The case where the Nizik animal went up in value could be either way. It doesn't really matter for our purposes. The Braisa is telling us the Chiddush in case it went up on its own, but the same din would apply if he fattened it up, that the Mazik still doesn't get out of pain. The same thing would apply even if he fattened it, though. In the Sefer, we necessarily, in order to make the Braisa work according to Rabbi Akiva, we have to say that he actually fattened it up, that he actually put money in it. Because otherwise, then we have the question: according to Rabbi Akiva, if there's shuktim, why doesn't the Nizik share in the increased value of the animal? But if you say pitma, if you say that he put money into it, that's different. Yeah, then the Nizik doesn't share in that.
So that's the question that we're asking.
So that's exactly the question
that we're asking.
Okay.
The two shushim, one puts money in and the other one
doesn't. No, but that's okay. So that's what we're saying. Because according to Rashi, it doesn't matter. One second. According to Rashi's way of looking at it, it doesn't matter how much he put in versus how much it went up in value. Either way, the fact that he put money into it means that only he gets to share that. According to Tosfos, it would really depend on the amount he put in versus the amount he's getting out. If the amount of increase in value is more than what he put in, then actually the Nizik would share in that. But that's not what Tosfos says. That's not what the Braisa is talking about. The Braisa is talking about a case where the increase in value is exactly as much or less than the amount that he put in.
Otherwise,
some of that shvach does belong to the Nizik, if you say that they're shvachim, yeah. Next, the Gemara says, Kichesh mach masnai. Let's go now to the case where we said that if the Nizik animal went down in value, and we said that you go according to Shasa Din. So in other words, again, the Mazik animal, the Mazik gored the Nizik, it caused $50 worth of damage on the spot. Later on, as time went by, the animal deteriorated still further. Now it's only worth even less. So you end up paying, we said, Kishasa Mada Badin, you figure out the total loss from before the goring until you pay 50 out of 100, yeah, right. As opposed to before, you would have paid 25 out of 50, yeah. So the question is, kichesh mach masmai, what are we talking about? What's the circumstance that caused this Nizik animal to deteriorate? Are we talking about that the owner, let's say, overworked it, and that caused it to weaken? Why? Why should the Mazik be on the hook for more money? Let him be able to tell him, you overworked your animal, you caused it to weaken, I should have to pay extra.
Because you overworked the animal because the animal was sick. If he hadn't been sick, he would not be overworked.
We don't know that. The fact is, once the animal is sick, then...
Then what used to be regular work becomes an overwork.
No, we're talking about that it became weaker directly because of the blow. No, because again,
that's what I'm saying.
No, because according to what you're saying, that you could argue it's a matter of grammar. My animal gored your animal. Fine, I agree. I'm on the hook for 50 because of that. But afterwards, if you went and did work with the animal, fine, it's true. It's work that maybe before it could have done easily and now it can't. I'm a grummer as far as that's concerned. That my animal goring yours didn't directly cause that further decrease in that. No, it's an indirect thing. It's because you used it for work.
It's for the same amount of work.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. You have the ability to not work with it. You have the ability to not work with it, and you chose to work with it such that now it's becoming weaker. That's a grumma. That's not something directly caused by my shur's action. So that's why Rav Ashi is saying, you have to say the kichesh machmas macha. It became sicker, it became weaker directly because of the blow. Which therefore...
Because what? People would say that?
Because otherwise it would be grumma. De amale, and why does that work? De amale, because now the nizik can say, counter the terach kvirabeh. It's as if the horn of your ox is still buried in my ox, meaning, and the damage is an ongoing thing, but not because I'm working with it. That's true. Then I would share in the blame for that. No, I haven't been working with it, but it's been becoming weaker. It's still the after effect. It's still delayed effect of your ox having gored it. Therefore, you're on the hook for that also.
And if he had been working with it, then he would have said no?
Then it depends what kind of work. We would have to find out what kind of
regular work, like the work he was doing before.
Again, like the work that he was doing before. Maybe it's not appropriate for the socks. But, again, that's not my problem as a mavic. I'm responsible for direct damages. I'm not responsible for... The same way as we said before, that if a shur injures a person, the owner of the shur is not responsible for sheves and ripui. The same way if one animal injures another, you're going to have to take the animal to a veterinarian, but I'm not on the hook for that. I'm on the hook for the actual damages. Here we're saying the actual damages include whatever further deterioration happens by the time of Hamadavadi.
Assuming that he didn't work with it at all.
As long as he didn't work with it, work that could be expected to make it deteriorate. And look, you know, it depends what kind of work we're talking about. I mean, you know, if he used it to put his coat on, that's not something that would make it deteriorate. If he used it for plowing, Mishnah says, if a shur that's worth 200 zuz gores another shur, which is also worth 200, the ain an avela yachakum, the dead ant, here we're talking about where it killed it, unlike before, we're talking about just injured it, the dead body of the carcass of the dead animal is not worth anything.
One killed the other one,
and now the one animal was a tam, the attacking animal was a tam. Therefore, the owner is going to be responsible to pay $100, 100 zuz. Amr of Meir. So the Meir says, Al-Zenemar, this is the kind of thing that the Pasuk talks about when it says, U'macharas asherach ayvachotzer askaskoi. The Pasuk says they should sell the live ox and divide the money. That's exactly what we do. He's owed $100. He's owed 100 zuz out of the 200 zuz ox. So fine, so you sell it, and each of them gets 100.
Kastinez.
So Rabbi Yehuda says to him, it's true, v'chein halacha, it's true, what you're saying is indeed the halacha, of course, he only owes him chatzi nezek, 100. However, your scenario only takes care of one half of the pasuk. The pasuk says that they sell the live ox and divide the money, but the pasuk also continues, v'loi kiyamta, v'gamach ha-mesi yachta, the pasuk continues that they also have to divide the dead one. Now, in your scenario, the dead one is not worth anything. There's nothing to divide it. If the Torah is telling us to machor to share a chayv chatzur as kaster as gamach hamesi yachtur, Rabbi Yehuda is taking the view that implies each of them is worth something. If the nevela is not worth anything, then you can't say that's what the pasuk. That can't be the case. The pasuk is talking about the ezer. So, what is the case the pasuk is talking about? Suppose that a shur worth 200 gores, another one that's also worth 200. By nevela yopach hamishin zuz. Now let's say the nevela is worth something. It's worth 50 gores. Then shezen noto chatsia chay v'chatsia mes. Shezen noto chatsia chay v'chatsia mes. In that case, each one of them is going to get half of the live one and half of the dead one, because as we talked about in the first parak, and as our Gemara is going to expand on this more, we talked about the idea that we talked about in the first parak, and again we can talk about it more over here, the idea that the pach nevela l'nizek, that the nizek is responsible for taking the animal and finding a buyer for the carcass. So therefore, what happens over here is you cause $150 worth of damage, because before it was $200 and now the nevela is worth $50. Therefore, you're going to have to pay $75. effectively, then what we do is we take the live animal, which is worth 200, the dead animal, which is worth 250. Yeah, so that's the point. So you sell the two things. You sell the live animal, you get 200 bits for it. You sell the dead carcass, you get 50 for it. Now you have 250. Each one of them is going to get 125, which means that the Nizek has been paid 75. So the Braita starts out with Rabbi Yehuda's scenario, and then, because after all, we have to have how does Rabbi Meir answer Rabbi Yehuda's objection? So that's what this Braita is going to explain. So if a shor worth 200 gourds, a shor worth 200. The Nevela is worth 50. Then we said, as the Mishnah said, Rabbi Yehuda says, Zen noito chasiya chai v'chasiya mes, v'zen noito chasiya chai v'chasiya mes. Each one gets half of the value of the living one and half the one value of the dead one. The zehu shura of a Torah dibur Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda says that is the case of the Torah is talking about of the shura. That's exactly what the pasuk means. Not to say that the same din wouldn't apply if the nevela was worthless. It's just that's not the scenario that the Torah is envisioning. Dibur Rabbi Yehuda. Rameo says, on the contrary, that's not the case the Torah is talking about. Ella, no, rather the case the Torah is talking about is Shor Shavim Asayim Shinagas for Shor Shavim Asayim. If each one is worth 200, the Ein and Aveli Yopa Kluman, the carcass isn't worth anything. Al Zen Namo Machos Ashayu Achayim Chotzer Eskasper. That's where it says you sell the live one and divide the money. Ella Mani Makayim Begamas Amethiyatun. So what am I doing with the second half of the pasuk? But they also divide the dead one, which you, Rabbi Yehuda, are using that as an argument against me to say that that's not the scenario we're talking about. What it is p'chast p'chse mitzah m'chastin b'chai. What we do is we take the deduction in value that was caused by the debt, and we divide that from the living one. Look at the first Rashi in the Gemara. P'chast p'chse mitzah m'chastin b'chai. Kolemer nevela lo shaycha gavet mazik fal. The nevela has nothing to do with the mazik. Unlike Rabbi Yehuda, who says the mazik and the nizik split the value of the nevela. Rameyer holds that the nevela has nothing to do with the mazik at all. Ella, shomen es nevela kama putin demer achshav mishal shayichai. We just figure out how much is the nevela worth now versus how much was it worth when it's alive. The noisim my mazik chatziyav chas, and you pay him half of that amount. So you pay him 125.
Can you repeat that a second?
The live animal was worth 200. Dead, it's worth only 50. The mayor is saying you don't consider the value of the the mayor is saying instead of saying that you're going to pay 100 out of the value of the live animal and 25 out of the value of the dead animal, we look at it differently. We calculate it differently. Before it was 200, now it's 50. Difference is 150, and that's what you're paying. And that's what you're paying. You're paying 75. So it sounds like he's saying the same thing as Rabbi Yehuda. He just kind of put it, which gets to the question. The bottom line is, according to both of them, each one gets 120. The result seems to be the same, right? Because it's a different calculation, right? According to Rabbi Yehuda, it's 100 out of the live one and 25 out of the dead one. According to the mayor, it's 125 out of the value of the dead one. What's the actual difference between them? Now, I mean, obviously the difference is how they dash in the circuit, but the Gemara wants to find an actual practical difference between them. Yeah. On the rather p'chas nevela, they're arguing on this point that we said before about p'chas nevela. If the value of the nevela goes down between when the animal died, between when the animal was killed, and when it's being sold. So Rameyer is saying that the mazik has nothing to do with the nevela. Therefore, like we said in the first parak, the whole decrease in value is on the nizik.
Decrease in value of the nevela, you mean?
At the time of the goring, as soon as the animal was gored, right, you could figure out the value of the dead animal, the carcass, is 50. By the time you went to Beis Din, the value has gone down, it's only 40. Right. According to the mayor, that loss of $10 is all on the nizik. Therefore, the mazik is still going to be paying only 75. By now the total loss to the nizik is 160. You ought to be paying 80 of it. No, the mayor says that's not our problem. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda would say that we do take that into consideration.
In other words, grama against no grama?
Not really grama, of course. Well, it's not really grama, but it's more, again, what does the pasuk mean? When it says gama hamesi yaftu, are you saying that like the mayor is saying it means the whole decrease in value from the goring the whole decrease in value at the moment of the goring, at the moment of the killing, is what we use as the basis for calculation. The gamma samesia. So we take the decrease in value of the dead animal and figure out and take that out of the value of the live animal. Or does it literally mean we have to split the value of the carcass between them? In which case, if the carcass goes down in value, then the mazus and the nizik are equally going to share in that law. So the mayor saw the chas nevela the nizik. The mayor holds that the decrease in value of the nevela is all on the nizik. Rabbi Yehuda saw the chas nevela the mazik. Habi pago. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda would hold that half of it is on the mazik.
Why does Rabbi Meir say it's on the nizik?
That's exactly how he's learning the pasuk. But gamas hamesi yaftun does not mean they each have an equal share in the mess. He says it doesn't mean they have an equal share in the mess, like Rabbi Yehuda is saying. It means that we use the decrease in value at the time of the death to figure out the amount of the payment. At the time of the death, anything that happens after that is not the mazik's concern. Yeah.
And
Rabbi Yehuda says that no, the value of the nevela is split between them also. And if the value of the nevela goes down after the death, then the mazus is going to be responsible for half of that also. Because the pasuk says the gamma hamesi yaftun, and also they divide the living one. So he learns that it means that literally the value of the dead one is divided between them, and they both share equally in yet. Amalei Abaye im kain. If you're going to say like that, if you're going to say that explanation of what Rabbi Yehuda holds. If you're going to say that Rabbi Yehuda holds in that case that the mazik has to share in the decrease in value of the nevela, then im ken l'chinu Rabbi Yehuda tam chomer mimur. Then you have a case. Then it comes out according to Rabbi Yehuda that a tam will be more stringent than a mur. Namely, we learned in the first parak that. When it comes to a muad, specifically we mentioned over there in the case of a bird, there's no tam versus muad. A bird is always muad. We said there, the nevela is completely the property of the nizik, and the mazik uses the nevela towards his payment and then just pays the remainder. So in the case of a muad, you say any reduction in value of the nevela is all on the mizik. The mazik does not have to pay more because of that. Here, when you're talking about a sure tam, you're going to say that part of that is on the mazik. So it comes out that a tam is more stringent than a muad. When it comes to a muad, if an animal falls into a burr and dies, for example. So again, the animal was worth 200. Now that it's dead, it's worth only 50. Later on, it deteriorates and it's worth only 40. We said in the first paragraph, the mazik is entitled to consider that 50 as partial payment, and now he has to pay another 150 on top of that, so that the guy has a total of 200. Now, though, by the time it went to Beis Din, the carcass is deteriorated, it's worth only 40. Tough luck, the mazik still only has to pay another 150. So now the nizik is only going to be getting 190, 40 for the carcass that he can sell, and 150 that he's getting from the mazik.
Instead of 40
plus 160. Here you're saying, though, that the nevela goes down in value, we're saying that that's going to increase the amount the mazik pays proportionally in the case of a tam.
So we're not saying the same thing.
So we're saying, but it comes out, in other words, it comes out that a tam, you're treating a tam more stringently than a mor. Yeah.
At least for the nizak.
For the mazik we're talking about. For the mazik, it comes out that he ends up paying more. In this scenario, he pays more for not more in dollar value, but more of the nezik than he would than he would if it was a more. And the chitema hochinami. So you might say, okay, so big deal. So tam can be in a certain way more stringent than a more. And it's not. We learn later on in the Masechta, when we talk about the dinim of what kind of shmira is needed for a shur. Now again, we discussed in the first perek the idea that you're expected to take reasonable precautions to prevent your mammon from going out and causing damage. You're expected to cover a burr with a cover. You're expected to make sure there's enough empty space around your eish, etc. And you're expected to keep your shur locked up in the normal way. Rav Yehuda holds over there that the dinim, the amount of guarding, the amount of how much you have to make sure the shur is under lock and key is more stringent in the case of a tam than it is with a mur, for reasons which we'll discuss there. He learned the specific over there. That's not the point.
Therefore, you need less.
But that's the thing. Rav Yehuda is going to say over there. We'll learn this in a week and a half. As the Shem on Mem Hei, that Rav Yehuda holds that actually, in the case of a tam, you need stronger security measures than you do for a mor.
Why?
We'll learn over there. He learns it from Sukkot. Okay. The point is that we said Rav Yehuda, I'm a tam chay of a mor puzzer. That's the case over there. You went and then tied up the animal with a rope, for example, and it went out and caused damage anyway. Rabbi Yehuda holds, if the animal is a tam, you're chayev, and if it was a mord, you're potter. You're more responsible for a tam than a mord. So very well, you could say, yes, Rabbi Yehuda may hold that for certain purposes we consider a tam more stringent than a mord.
But does these purposes apply in this?
That's what we have to figure out. Emor, Shamat, Rabbi Yehuda, the Indian Shemira, the Stevie Kroy. Fine, I can understand Rabbi Yehuda makes that distinction when it comes to the guarding of the animal because he has a potter. Like, where do we ever find that he says such a thing as far as the payment? The Hatanya, and in fact, we learn in a Braisa that it's not so. Rabbi Yehuda, I mean, Yochol Shur Shava Mana Shenergach Shur Shava Chomish Sloim. Let's say, for example, you have a Shur which is worth a Mana, which is 100 Zuz, Gores a Shur which is worth 5 Sloim, a Sela is 4 Zuzim, a Shur that's worth 100, Gore a Shur that's worth 20, Banaveli Yop a Sela. The nevela is only worth four zuzim. So far the damage has been sixteen zuzim.
Four out of twenty.
Yeah. So you would think zen notes of chatsia chai v'chatsia mes, zen notes of chatsia chai v'chatsia mes. You would think in that case you apply the usual rules. You say that each one gets half of the living animal and half of the dead one. Now the problem is the living animal is worth a lot more than the dead one was. The living animal is worth 100. We said. So if you were to say that, if you say the living one is worth 100. The dead carcass is worth 4. So you have a total of 104. So you would say you split it, and each one is getting. The live animal is worth 100.
Right.
The dead animal is worth a seller, which is 4 zuzim.
The live is the carcass and the.
No, the live is the one that there's the mouth, which is still alive.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but it's worth 100.
Right.
The dead animal is worth only 4. If you take literally what the pasuk is saying, that you sell the live one, you sell the carcass, and split the money between them, it comes out each one of them is getting 52. But 104 divided by 2. The problem is the whole damage is only 16. And Rabbi Yehuda continues. A marta, you have to consider. When the Torah talks about a muad versus a tam, what is the Torah excluding the muad? The Torah is saying it's tam, and then a muad has different rules. Lahachmer olav alahachmer olav. The Torah coming to be machmer on the muad or to be makel. Hevi omer lahachmer olav. Necessarily, you have to say the purpose of the Torah talking about the concept of a mu'ad is to say that it's more stringent. So, ma mu'ad eni mashalom ela masha hizit. The madach mu'ad only pays no more than what it damaged. In this scenario, if the attacking animal was a mu'ad, then there's no chati nezik, there's nezik shalom, you'd be paying 16.
Because it was worth 20,
and now it's worth 4. Now dead is worth 4. Tam akal lakosh, again, how much more so? A tam, which is supposed to be more lenient, how much more so? And in fact, I mean,
so what?
That you're not going to pay more than what you damaged. Whereas in the scenario we're just talking about, if you were to take literally at face value what the pasuk is saying, that you take the live animal and sell it off, and half of its value goes to the nizik, and you sell take the carcass and sell it off, and half of its value goes to the nizik, he's getting 52 on a damage only 16. Doesn't make sense. Yeah. So in other words, the point of this braisa is Rabbi Yehuda himself is clearly accepting the idea that a mord, when it comes to the payment, has to be more stringent than a tam. So back to our question then, if you're telling me that Rabbi Yehuda holds that the deterioration in value of the carcass is partly on the mazik, then you have another area in which a tam ends up being more stringent than a mord. And we see that Rabbi Yehuda is clearly saying that when it comes to payment, the tam always has to be less stringent than the mord. So it can't be to go back to our original case, it can't be that that's the machlokes between him and Rabbi Meir, that Rabbi Yehuda would say that the mazik is responsible for, is going to have to reimburse extra for the deterioration of the nevela, and Rabbi Meir would say that not. El Amr of Yeshua, because then it wouldn't make sense, because then you have a Tam being more stringent than a Mor. Based on the calculations that we just said, the Rav Moshe will point out that it actually amounts to the same thing. Again, if we took a scenario like the one Rabbi Huda is describing, again, if you were to say that Pas Nevela is partly on the Mazik, partly on the Nizik, Adonai, you would have the scenario that we just described. He'd end up paying even more than 52. If it went down by another dollar, he'd end up paying 52.5, et cetera. And you'd like to have that more stringent than a Mor. So literally, not just that we're saying that in principle it's more stringent, because here you're paying extra for the Pas Nevela and here you're not, but in actual fact, in actual dollar amounts, you might end up paying more. Elo, I'm Rav Yechanan said, no, rather Rav Yechanan says, Shvach Nevela, if they know. On the contrary, we can argue that the Machlokas between Rav Meir and Rav Huda is the other way around. What if the Nevela went up in value? Now, how does the Nevela go up in value? I guess the pashtus is, there's a shortage of dog food at that time, and therefore, you know, any dead animals, any roadkill are worth more than they were before. I don't know. Yeah.
Unless they would agree on the rest.
If the animal went down in value, there's no question that you can't make the mazik pay more. The dead animal's carcass went down in value, Rabbi Yochanan is saying there's no question, based on the question we just asked, there's no way that you can say that the mazik is going to be on the hook for more. Because then you're going to have a Tam being more stringent than Mor, and we can't have that. So no, rather Rabbi Yechon is saying, Shvach Nevela Eke Benai. No, the machlokas between a Meir and a Yehuda would be the other way around, if the Nevela went up in value. As a side thing, by the way, it's an interesting thing, some of the folks should point out, you had a Abaye giving us the previous discussion of the Gemara, now all of a sudden you have Rabbi Yechon coming in. Rabbi Yechon is two generations before Abaye. How is he all of a sudden coming in? So the answer is basically that Rabbi Yochanan is not saying his statement in answer to Abaye, but he's saying kind of an independent statement. He's saying you should know when we're trying to figure out, when we're trying to explain the Medrash, what are Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Huda arguing about, without even getting into Abaye's question and answer and that whole discussion, you should know, he says, I'm telling you as a fact, they're arguing about Shvach Nevela. Then the Masadri Agamara, then Ravina and Ravashi put it in this order and makes it look as if Rabbi Yochanan is actually answering Abaye. But really, okay.
Abaye came late.
That's the point. Abaye is late.
What, 200 years?
Not quite that much. Abaye was a Talmud of Rabba, who in turn was briefly a Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan. Abaye was born when Rabbi Yochanan was still alive, but he was a boy at the time.
Yeah.
No, he was a boy. He was a boy at the time when Rabbi Yochanan was passed away. Okay. Anyway. So Shvach Nevela Eke Benayim, namely Gemar Sovah the Nizikavi. So therefore, Reb Meir would hold that entire Shvach belongs to the Nizik. Umar Sovah Palga, where's Rabbi Huda, would hold that half of it, that you split it. So, in other words, let's take the scenario that we have at the beginning. Each one is worth 200. The dead animal is worth 50. So far, we would say there's 150 worth of damage. So therefore, as the owner of a tam, you're paying 75. Now, let's say a day later, the carcass is worth 160 instead of is worth 60 instead of 50.
It increases.
That's what we're saying. According to the mayor, we don't factor in the increase. The mazik still has to pay the same 75.
Reduce the damage.
That's right. So the mayor would hold it doesn't reduce the damage. You still say the mazik is still going to have to pay 75. It's still going to have to pay 75, and now the nizik has a carcass which is worth 60, whereas before it was worth 50. So he's gaining himself an extra $10. Whereas according to Rabbi Huda, we do factor that in.
What's the logic for Rabbi Huda?
Because that's why the pasuk says, "But more pasuk is a shor b'rum b'gamas hamesi yachdun." Yeah. Behind her the kokash alei little Rabbi Huda. So now we can understand what Rabbi Yehuda is asking on Rav Meir and our Mishnah. So now, not in the Mishnah, in the Braisa rather, when this Braisa that we just quoted, Yochol Shor Shavah Mana, etc., the calculation where we had on the face of it, you're going to be paying 52 on a damage of only 16. So now we can understand Rabbi Yehuda's question in a different way. Hashta de Amrit, now that you're saying, according to Rabbi Huda's Shita, Chas Rachmana Ilavei de Mazik, that the Torah has a certain Rachmanos on the Mazik, the Shok of the Shvach, in the sense that he gets part of the Shvach, in the sense that the increase in value of the carcass reduces the amount that he has to pay. So So now, based on that, Yochel Shova Chomish Sloyim Shinogach Shur Shavamon. Actually, there's a difference now. Now, let's say the other way around. What if the Mazik animal is worth a lot less than the Nizik animal? Suppose now that a Shur that's worth 5 Sloyim, which is 20 Zuz, gores a Shur which is worth 100 Zuz. So this is the opposite of the scenario we're talking about before.
I mean, before we were saying we were even.
No, we started with a case where we were even. The first price that we quoted at the beginning of the Amud, Rabbi Yehuda was saying that the Mazik animal was worth, that the Mazik animal was worth 5 times as much as the Nizik animal. Now we're saying the other way around. The Nizik is
the
So, Nevela Yofa Chamishim Zuz. Let's say, again, the Nevela is worth 50 Zuz out of an original 100. If you're going to say Zenner to Chatsia Chai Vachsiemes, Zenner to Chatsia Chai Vachsiemes, so what are you going to say then? Again, we have the live animal, the Mazik, is worth 20. The dead one is worth 50. If we were to say that each one of them, if we were to say split value of the live one, about you need to have a total of 70 you're dealing with over here, 20 from the live one, 50 from the dead. If you say, again, if you take the words of the Torah at face value and say that you divide the value of the living one and the value of the dead one, it means 70 divided by 2 is 35. Each of them is getting 35. You can't, because the Mazik animal was originally was worth only 20. Heichan Amarta, you have to say, Heichan Masinu Mazik Nisker Shazen Nisker. Where do you ever find a case where Mazik gains that you're going to argue in this case he gains? Yeah. The Oimer, and not only that, you have a posit that says, Shalom Yishalom, and the posit says, he shall certainly pay. Implying Bailam Mishaman, then Bailam Neutlin, implying that the owner pays, the owner of the Mazik animal pays, he doesn't gain anything out of the thing. Yeah, the Gemara says, the Gemara interjects, by the way, Maiva Omer, what does he need a prophet for? The reason is because Vachite, you might argue, Hani Miller, Hechadik, say the Lenizit. Fine, you might argue it's true. You can't allow the Mazik to gain where that's going to also involve a loss to the Nizik. Namely, the Nizik's animal, after all, was worth 100, and even the carcass is worth 50. But you're only allowing him to get, you're only allowing him to get 35. So he has his carcass, which is worth 50, plus another 35, is 85, and still he still hasn't been completely made whole from his original 100 that he lost. Aval hechad the lack of seder Nizik, but you could construct a case, let's say, where the Mazik stands to gain, but the Nizik doesn't stand to lose. It's not a zero sum game. To go and shurf shava chomish sloyim, shinagach shur shava chomish sloyim. Suppose that one ox, which is worth 5 sloyim, which is 20 zuz, gores another one, which is worth 20 zuz. A nevela yapa shloshim zuz. Suppose now that the nevela is worth more than the animal was worth when it was alive. You could conceive.
You say that a live animal is worth less than a nevela, I mean, what did you ever see that?
Maybe because, for example, it costs money to get it chested, whereas like this you already have it dead, and therefore
the value of the animal itself.
I don't know, but suppose you have such a case. So let's run the numbers then. Let's run the numbers. The Torah is telling us you take half of the value. The Torah is telling us to get half the value of the live one. You take the live animal, you take the dead one, and you split the amount. So what do we end up with? You say the live one is worth 20. The dead one is now worth 30. 20 is worth. There's four zeros to a cell, yeah. So 20 and 30 is 50, divided at 25. You give the Nizik his 25. He's not losing anything because actually he's gaining. In fact, I mean he didn't lose anything at all. The Nevela itself was worth more than the living animal. But the Mazik is gaining something also because before we had an animal worth 20 and now he's getting 25 out of the whole deal. So you would think then that the logic of saying that you can't have Mazik Nisker, maybe that only applies where it's a zero something, where the Nizik is going to be losing proportionally. In this case, the Nizik's not losing anything. Maybe there's nothing wrong with making Mazik gain something.
As long as the Nizik doesn't lose it.
Therefore, for Omer, Shalom is Shalom. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda also has to bring a positive that says that no, he only pays, meaning Bailam Shalom, then Bailam Nosim. The owner is only going to pay, the owner of the Mazik animal is only going to pay, he's never going to be receiving money out of the deal. So the point is the Gemara is saying, based on this principle that we're saying that according to Rabbi Yehuda, the increase in the value of the Nevela is split between the Mazik and the Nizik, That's why Rabbi Yehuda brings the scenario over here where the dead animal was worth more than it was when it was alive, and he's saying, nevertheless, you still don't take the pasuk at face value in that case because the mazik is going to gain from that. But we see that he agrees with the principle that the increase in value is credited to the mazik in the sense that it reduces the amount you would have to pay. So if it makes him gain, we won't do that. But if it reduces the amount you have to pay, we will do that. That's the point of the machlokes between him and Rav Meir. Because Rav Meir says you don't apply any of that. You look at the value of the nevela when the animal was killed. You don't look at any increase in value after.
And Rav Yehuda says no.
And Rav Yehuda says no. Yes.
Because if you still gave the increase in value, as long as the nevela doesn't
gain, right? Yeah. As long as the mazik doesn't gain. Okay, but if you're going to say all like this, if you're going to say that Rabbi Yehuda is saying again that the increase in value of the nevela is credited to the mazik, you could have a scenario where a tam ends up paying more than chati nezek. Let's say for more than chati nezek. Namely, Rashi. So Rashi gives the scenario as follows. Let's say a shur that was worth 50 zuz gores and kills a shur that was worth 40. The dead animal is worth only 20. So now the one that was 40. So the damage amounts to 20. The damage amounts to 20, and chati nezek would be 10. Again, if we say that you do chati chai v'chati nes, what are you going to do? You're going to have, again, you have the living one, which is worth 50, the dead one, which is worth 20, that's 70. So what are you doing? Each one of them is getting 75. Each one of them is getting 75, but the mazik's animal was worth 50. So he's losing 15. Chati nezek is only 10. Yet the Torah says that you sell the living animal and divide the money, meaning that you don't pay more than chati nezek. The answer is yes, that's true. But on the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda learns from the pasuk that we said before that the value that it went down, one was worth 50, one was worth 40. The dead animal was worth 20. Chati nezek would be 10. The damage is 20. Chati nezek would be 10. But like this, if you were to say, "Mocher is a sharachai, mechotzer is kasker, the gamas hames yachtun," what would it be? You're taking the live animal, which is 50, the dead one, which is 20. Each one of them gets half of that, is 35. Meaning the mazik therefore was losing 15 because he originally had an animal worth 50. Chati nezek is only 10. Why is he paying 15? The answer is isle the Rabbi Yehuda pchas shapachamisa machasim mechai. Rabbi Yehuda does agree with what we said on Amud Aleph, that the mayor says that the deduction in value that the deduction went down because of the death, you split from the living one. Meaning Rabbi Yehuda does agree, you cast the damages as chati nezek. It's true, even in a scenario like that. You don't literally say that you divide the value of the living one, the value of the dead one, and each one gets half. Because yes, then he'd end up paying more than chati nezek. Rabbi Yehuda does agree that the pasuk means that you never pay more than chati nezek. So in a case like this, you would sell the live animal, which is worth 50. Out of that, you would take 10 and pay it to the nezek, and you keep the remaining 40.
That's right.
So fine.
The damage was 10.
Yeah. The problem with that is Manole. Where is he getting that from? Evidently, he's getting that from the fact that the pasuk says that also you split the value of the dead one. Problem is, we already said in the Gemara, right after the Mishnah, that Rabbi Yehuda uses those very words, actually the Mishnah as well, that he uses the very words, Vegamas Hamesiyah, to teach us that the Nevela, in a certain sense, belongs equally to both of them. So how does he also have it available to teach us the concept that the maximum you ever pay is Chati Nezek? The answer is, yes, but if you only meant to, if it was only meant to teach us about the disposition of the nevela, and the amount that and the amount that and how much the nevela goes towards the payment, then the pasuk could have said, right? The SMS and the dead one. My v'gam, why did it say, and also the dead one? So therefore, it means shemam and atarti. From that, we can learn two different. From that, we can learn two different lamudim. One, that you do consider the value of the nevela. The value of the nevela, again, if it goes up in value according to the behoda, you do take that into consideration when figuring out the amount of damages that the amount of chati nezek that the mazik is going to have to pay. But also, we learn from it that on the other hand, in other cases where this kind of calculation would lead the mazik to pay more than chati nezek, we don't do that. We cap it at chati nezek.
The vegan.
From the vegan. Do the Mishnah and a little bit of the Gemara and leave the rest for tomorrow. Mishnah says, yes, chayev al ma'is shuri. You can have a case of somebody who's chayev for something that his ox did, or potter al ma'is atzme, but if he himself done the same thing, he would be potter for it. Or the other way around, potter al ma'is shuri, chayev al ma'is atzme. You can have a case where somebody is potter for what his shuri did, and chayev for what he, if he himself had done the same thing. Yeah. Case that. What are some examples? Shurah shibiyish potter. For example, if a shurah causes embarrassment to somebody, or somebody else, then you're potter for that. Well, who should be a chayev? Whereas if he himself had caused boshas, he would be chayev. Tosfos points out, by the way, it's not only biyish. The truth is, I mean, the same din applies also if a shurah injures somebody. We said before that you also potter from tsar and ripui and so forth. Yeah.
So we not that
before. Yeah. Because the Mishnah is just trying to show us cases where the dinim of a shur are different than the dinim of a person, and then where they can be polar opposites, basically.
There's no boshes,
but also no tsar and ripui and so forth. Yeah. But on the other hand, if you call somebody boshes, then you're chayav. And again, boshes. But I should point out, boshes doesn't necessarily involve injury. We'll learn in the eighth pedic when we learn about boshes. Boshes can also mean, for example, let's say you slap a guy in the face, for example. That's an example of boshes. So we're not talking about that yet. You rip off his clothes in the street, for example. So you could have a case, let's say a shur is walking by and the horn rips off somebody's clothes and now he's standing there. That's boshes. Yeah, but the owner of the shur would be potter, whereas if you yourself did that, rip off his clothes in public, you'd be chayev.
So the clothes, if you would lose through the shur, you wouldn't be with that
date? No, you'd be chayev for the nezek to the clothes themselves. I'm talking about let's say he didn't rip the clothes, let's say he managed to peel them all. Yeah. Another example, let's say your shur blinds the eye of your eved, Knani, or knocks out his teeth, you're potter, you don't have to flee that eved. Whereas if you yourself mastered it, these things, chayev, then you'd be chayev to flee the eved.
That's
odd. Why?
Because a man lost an eye.
Very nice, but the fact is, it has to be that you did it. We learned Kedushin, we learned that there were rules about it. According to Rabbi Shimon, even more so, he's got a mashakta. The halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon, fine, but nevertheless, still, you know, there's rules about it. Yeah. Another,
if it was not an eved,
if it was a regular person, then you'd be back in eved. On the other hand, if a person's shur injures his father, the person's, the owner's father or mother, then you're chayev to pay them for the damages, just like anybody else. Whereas if the person himself injured his father or his mother, he would be potter because come later d'rabbanan, because the Torah says the person who injures his father or his mother is chayev misi, chayev where is it, chenet, I think. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's Tenek. I think it's Tenek, yeah. I don't remember for sure, but yeah, I think so. So there you have an example where Shur does something and you're chayev for payment, but if you yourself do it, you're potter for payment. Another example, Shur shehidlik at the Godesh b'Shabbos chayev. If your Shur set somebody else's stack of grain on fire on Shabbos, then you're chayev. Well, who shehidlik at the Godesh b'Shabbos potter? Whereas if you set that same stack of grain on fire on Shabbos, you'd be potter. Mipnei Shur chayev b'nafshei. Again, the Talmud of the Adam, because you're going to be chayev mitzvah for Shabbos. Yeah. Okay, so let's look at the market tomorrow, actually.